Welcome to Riverview Conversations. This is Jason.
And this is Phil.
And this is Tyler.
And today we are continuing our journey through the book of Mark. And it's going to start getting exciting.
Oh, good. We can match our music now.
This next section is, there's probably like three sections here that kind of go together. It's got a powerful message to it. Jason, would you like to start reading at verse 35 and go through verse 41?
Sure. Mark chapter 4, verse 35, Jesus calms the storm. As evening came, Jesus said to his disciples, "Let's cross to the other side of the lake." So they took Jesus in the boat and they started out, leaving the crowds behind, although the other boats followed. But soon a fierce storm came up. High waves were breaking into the boat and it began to fill with water. Jesus was sleeping at the back of the boat with his head on a cushion. The disciples woke him, shouting, "Teacher, don't you care that we're going to drown?" Then when Jesus woke up, he rebuked the wind and said to the waves, "Silence, be still." Suddenly the wind stopped and there was a great calm. Then he asked them, "Why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith?" The disciples were absolutely terrified. "Who is this man?" they asked each other. "Even the wind and waves obey him."
What do you see in these verses that might be unusual, that might stand out to you?
Well, one of the biggest things that stands out to me is Jesus is sleeping in the midst of the storm.
Okay, yeah, that's...
that's pretty unique. And what does this look like? What does this mean to you? When you read this, what do you think it means?
Well, I see several things here. First, the evening came and Jesus said to his disciples, "Let's cross over to the other side of the lake." He's been talking to these people and sun's starting to go down. And he says, "Let's go to the other side of the lake." He doesn't tell them where on the other side of the lake he's going. He doesn't tell them why he's going. He just says, "Let's go." And the disciples follow him. So that's the first thing that I point out, that the disciples just, they willingly followed. Didn't know where they were going, didn't know why they were going. But Jesus said, "Go," and they went. And the second thing is this storm. Do you know about the Sea of Galilee? You know anything about it?
It's a big lake.
It's a big lake. And it's situated in kind of a valley. There's mountains on either side. And what happens on this lake is that winds will come through the valley and immediately will cause this lake to change from calm to extremely stormy. And so that's what happened.
I was on Lake Pend'Oreille in northern Idaho near Sandpoint. It's a large lake, not as big as the Sea of Galilee, but it's a large lake. And when the wind picks up, it can get swells, you know, 2-3 foot tall, where a little boat is really, really pounding, you know. And it basically, everybody gets off the lake during that time. Unless you're a big boat, you're not going to want to be on the lake. And I can imagine a boat that's, you know, good for a dozen people. Maybe it's got a sail. Maybe it's got some oars. It's not a huge boat. So even 2 or 3 foot swells like I was experiencing at Lake Pend'Oreille would be really significant for a small boat like that.
Yeah, but I think it was bigger than 2 or 3 foot waves.
I'm sure.
So we have Jesus sleeping in the back of the boat. Have you ever been whitewater canoeing or whitewater rafting?
I have.
Where do you sit?
Depends. I like sitting in the front.
Okay, that's one of the good places to sit. I mean, you come up to a rapid, you look right down into the rapid, into the hole, and man, it's exciting.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, every now and then somebody wants to take your seat. Where do you go?
I mean, it's more peaceful in the back. You could go there.
You're still young, so I want to give you some advice. If you can't sit in the front, sit in the very back. Because as you go over a wave, the back end gets kicked up, right? And if you push up with your legs just a little bit, you'll catch some air. And you'll literally be flying through the rapid. Now, that's excitement. I can see that look in your eyes like, I don't know if I want to do that. Jesus is in the back of the boat. And it's, you know, kicking up. And he's sleeping like nothing's going on. When I was in Africa, we were on the ocean in Mombasa, and there were these guys that would take you out in their small little fishing boats and, you know, cruise up and down the shore. And so me and some other missionaries, we took a little trip, you know, and it wasn't a 3-hour trip. Some people will get that. Anyway, I sat in the back of the boat, and I hate to tell you, but I got seasick. Back of the boat was just kicking up and back and forth. And this is where Jesus is, not a care in the world. And the next thing we see is the disciples saying, "Teacher, don't you care that we're going to drown?" And what makes this so significant is how many of the disciples were fishermen?
At least 4 or 5.
At least 4 or 5. These guys knew how to handle a boat. And they're to the point where they think they're going to die, literally. They've been on the water all their life. They have probably seen or heard tales of other fishermen who have been out when the winds kick up and they lost their boats and lost their lives. So they know the danger that they're in. They're about ready to die. That's how bad this storm is. Mm-hmm. And so they wake up Jesus. And I can just imagine Jesus kind of, if you've ever been in a deep sleep, it's kind of hard to wake up. And I can imagine Jesus waking up and kind of stretching and kind of looking around, getting his bearings, like, what's going on here? And he sees what the situation is. He sees what his disciples, you know, the fear that they have. And he stands up and he rebukes the wind.
This is a strange part to me. I mean, Tyler, you said that him sleeping in the back was a strange thing or an extraordinary thing. I feel like this one is pretty extraordinary. You don't just like point at the sky and say, "Stop being angry, go away," you know, and then the clouds disappear and the sun comes out and the wind dies down. That's not how humans work. We can't interact with the elements of our world and actually have an impact on what they do. And turn your phone to silent now.
Yes.
So the fact that Jesus can talk to the wind is pretty cool.
Yeah. And I think if I'm thinking about the sleep again, do you think this sleep was a sleep because Jesus was tired or for the benefit and testing the disciples?
I think both. I think Jesus was probably extremely tired. And I think when he first, when they first got in the boat and he laid down, he's getting that rocking sensation. And that just kind of lulls him to sleep. And so he's in this deep sleep. And it says he rebuked. I don't think he just got up and say, "Hey, calm down." I think it was like, you don't know what this is like, but when your two kids are fighting and you want them to stop, you raise your voice a little bit. And you say, "Hey, stop fighting." And I think that's what Jesus said. "Hey, settle down. And the wind, it says, immediately stopped, and there was a great calm. And this is the other part that, I find interesting, a great calm. I believe that the wind stopped instantly, and the lake became as smooth as glass instantly. And, of course, the disciples are all freaked out about this. And Jesus says, why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith?
I'm seeing all these elements that tie to the story we're about to go to. Like, this is not an isolated piece of the story that's connected to chapter 5. And I'm seeing connections to previous stories and parables that Jesus has told about the subject of faith. You know, the idea of the mustard seed and the soil and, you know, all those things that we have talked about in previous episodes, that he's like, do you not have faith? Right? Like the idea is, I've planted the seed of the gospel. Do you not trust? Do you not like understand that your hands or your lives are in the hands of God? Like, Jesus can sleep because he has faith in the outcome. Mm-hmm. And he knows that God has a mission for him. He knows that he's the Father has a mission, I should say, that he's got an activity to do on the other side of the lake. He knows exactly that he's safe. In spite of the storm, he's not worried because he has faith in what God's plan for the future is. And if Jesus is there and he has a plan for these disciples, and Jesus is God too, do they not trust that he's got a plan? Like, they're like, oh, we're going to drown. And they're sitting with, or, you know, they're in the boat with the God of the universe, the one who created these elements of nature.
Well, and I think this is like us today. You know, here the disciples are in this storm. What do they try to do? They try to solve the problem by themselves instead of going to the one who can solve the problem. And when it gets to the point where you're about ready to go under, then they go to Jesus. Hmm. How many times do we do that?
Yeah.
We solve this problem on our own and, well, I can't solve it anymore. Okay. I'll reach out to Jesus at the last moment, you know. And of course, the disciples are terrified, and they say, who is this man that, you know, even the wind and the waves obey him? They're totally freaked out by this adventure, but it gets better. Tyler, you want to read chapter 5 for us?
Sure, yeah.
The whole chapter? Maybe at least through verse 20?
Yeah, let's go through verse 20.
Okay, Mark 5, verse 1 to 20. So they arrived at the other side of the lake in the land of the Gerasenes. Just as Jesus was climbing from the boat, a man possessed by an evil spirit ran out from a cemetery to meet him. This man lived among the tombs and could not be restrained, even with a chain. Whenever he was put into chains and shackles, as he often was, he snapped the chains from his wrists and smashed the shackles. No one was strong enough to control him. All day long and throughout the night, he would wander among the tombs and in the hills, screaming and hitting himself with stones. When Jesus was still some distance away, the man saw him. He ran to meet Jesus and fell down before him. He gave a terrible scream, shrieking, "Why are you bothering me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? For God's sake, don't torture me." For Jesus had already said to the spirit, "Come out of the man, you evil spirit." Then Jesus asked, "What is your name?" And the spirit replied, "Legion, because there are many of us here inside this man." Then the spirits begged him again and again not to send them to some distant place. There happened to be a large herd of pigs feeding on the hillside nearby. "Send us into those pigs," the evil spirits begged. Jesus gave them permission. So the evil spirits came out of the man and entered the pigs, and the entire herd of 2,000 pigs plunged down the steep hillside into the lake, where they drowned. The herdsmen fled to the nearby city and the surrounding countryside, spreading the news as they ran. Everyone rushed out to see it for themselves. A crowd soon gathered around Jesus, but they were frightened when they saw the man who had been demon-possessed, for he was sitting there fully clothed and perfectly sane. Those who had seen what happened to the man and to the pigs told everyone about it, and the crowd began pleading with Jesus to go away and leave them alone. When Jesus got back into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go too. But Jesus said, "No, go home to your friends and tell them what wonderful things the Lord has done for you and how merciful he has been." So the man started off to visit the 10 towns of that region and began to tell everyone about the great things Jesus had done for him. And everyone was amazed at what he told them.
What do you see here? This is exciting.
Well, I think the first thing, I think it's Matthew. It tells the story and says that immediately they're on the other side. And that sounds like a Mark thing. But here in Mark, it doesn't say that. It just says the winds and waves obeyed him. So they arrived on the other side of the lake. Mm-hmm. There's no like explanation about how they get there. It's just they're there on the other side. So I think along with the wind dying down and lake becoming calm right away, also, it's like they find themselves ending the conversation with Jesus about the waves and being in awe of that, and they're stepping out on the shore. Like, that's the next thing in the story. Yeah. And whether that was miraculous, I kind of choose to believe it was. But that's kind of the first thing. Like, there is a specific spot that they land, and Jesus had designed this experience to happen.
You know, when I go through the Bible, I like to try to imagine the emotions that people are feeling. And you can imagine, first of all, the disciples are freaked out by this. And then they meet an evil person, a devil-possessed man. What do you know about the region of the Gerasenes?
Well, it's a region outside of the land of Israel, just northeast, I believe, and it's full of Gentiles mostly and mixed. As you can tell, they're herding pigs. That's something that would never happen in Israel. Okay. So these are people that are not believers in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, like the Israelites.
This is an area called Decapolis because there are 10 cities here. And these people do not like the Jews. Boy, there's something else in here that, as we go on, I just thought of. And this is the area that they come to, and they get out of the boat, and here's this demon-possessed man that comes to them. And he's been living among the tombs there, and I can't imagine what he even looks like. But obviously, the people in town are scared of him because they've tried to shackle him. And he goes up to Jesus and, "Why are you interfering with me?" And Jesus asks him an interesting question. He says, "What is your name?" And he replies, "My name is Legion."
Now, this, of course, is the Spirit replying.
This is the Spirit replying. "My name is Legion because there are many of us inside this man." Do you know how many people are in a legion?
Isn't it like 600?
Keep going. Add a zero to that.
6,000?
In a legion, there are 6,000 foot soldiers, plus cavalry, plus support staff.
So like 10,000.
We're talking more like 10,000. 10,000 evil spirits in this man, all fighting for a spot in his body. And what I see here is the odds are not very good. It's 10,000 to one. One Jesus, 10,000 evil angels. And who's shaking in their shoes?
Huh.
It's the evil angels. There are 10,000 of them. Only one Jesus. And they are so scared of him. This shows you how powerful that Jesus is. And that's the power that we can rely on in our day-to-day life.
I'm curious how that, like the skepticism in me, that's not the right word, but I'd certainly have a certain critical thinking kind of nature. And I look at these things and I say, how does that work? Like, how do you have a demon inside you? Like this demon possession thing, like, are they like in your organs? How do you fit 10,000 of them in there? Right. You know, like what yeah. exactly is this? Like what's the practical reality here?
Well, and the turmoil of like 10,000 demons inside of you, and they're all fighting for a space, mm-hmm. you know?
I think there's some other sort of dimension type of thing. Not exactly in like, second dimension, third dimension, not like a fourth dimension exactly, but kind of like a different thing like that. Like when Daniel prays and Gabriel's there basically instantly. I think that's not, I think that's, I guess maybe that's a little different, but
there's something, I think there's maybe something that we, maybe there's, see. Extra things about physics that we don't understand. And there maybe is a fourth dimension, a spiritual realm, whatever, uh-huh. that these spiritual beings can interact with. And in some way, they're tied to or we're bound to them in this possession thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's...
I feel like it's not like I'm a cup and these demons are poured into me. You know, that's not like... It's not really a physiological experience as much as it is a... spiritual bondage kind of experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll go with that.
Well, I'm trying to think about this story from the perspective of the man as well who's possessed. And there's a lot of different aspects that you could take. You know, how did he get to that position? I'm also thinking about as he's here and he's possessed by these 10,000 demons and... he living in this cemetery, breaking everything comes near him. Do you wonder, did he ever, in his mind, he's wishing he could reach out to Jesus, even if he doesn't know about Jesus, but reaching out and he gets help.
Yeah, well, right here it says that when Jesus climbed out of the boat, this man possessed by an evil spirit came from the tombs to meet him. And that statement, to meet him, suggests... intentionality. This wasn't just a random happened to be there when Jesus got there. No, he saw Jesus. Jesus came intentionally. He saw Jesus. He came intentionally. There was, I think, desire inside him that the demons didn't like exactly. Maybe they initially were coming up and are like, let's, you know, put up your dukes. We're going to fight Jesus. But my guess is that what you were talking about, Phil, is more of the reality. They knew they didn't stand a chance.
Yeah.
And so the that would imply that this man was exercising some amount of free will to bring himself to Jesus despite the demons. I wonder if that was a difficult thing for him.
Yeah,
I'm sure he had, you know, being tormented like that. Who knows how long he was tormented, but long enough that he got shackled several times. We're not exactly sure on that. But I'm sure there was a part of him that said, "I want to be out of this situation." You know.
So he's got no control. These demons are controlling him. And yet there is still a way that he can come to Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I love that idea that there is never a time in your life where you've gone so far that you have no ability to turn and and kneel before Jesus.
Right, right.
And I was thinking about a slightly different aspect of it as well, connecting it where with the last story, how the disciples there also they have no idea what to do. They feel lost and they feel like they're about to die, and they reach out to Jesus. But until then, it seems like they're all alone. They forget that they have Jesus there, but it seems like they're all alone. And for this man who's possessed, he's there, and until Jesus comes, he doesn't have this opportunity to reach out to Jesus. And he
that's interesting has to compare
the
two.
The same feeling of just abandonment and being lost spiritually or physically, all of the above. So even though they're completely different stories, they have that same kind of element where both of them are experiencing the same thing. And Jesus appears in both of them, which is, And Jesus,
that's a cool connection.
Jesus is, whenever we're going through these things and we feel lost, we feel spiritually or physically or whatever, we know we can reach out to Jesus, and he will be there and save us from those things that are tormenting us.
On another note, there's thinking inside the head of the demon here. When Satan and when Lucifer and these angels that agreed with him rebelled against God, we like to take the position that they believed things about God that weren't true, things about his character that caused them to want to rebel. And this suggests one of those things that they believed about God. Notice in verse 7, the demon screams, "Why are you interfering with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In the name of God, I beg you, don't torture me."
Uh-huh, yes.
That's interesting. His perspective, or this demon's perspective of God, is that he is a torturer.
Mm. Yeah.
And isn't that many of Christians also have that same perspective, that God is a God who tortures and enjoys torturing.
Yeah, one of the first lies that Satan told humanity is that you won't surely die. And then he's proceeded to continue that idea with the eternal torment. The wicked won't die, even though God says the wages of sin is death. And for God so loved the world, he gave his only son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. So the everlasting life is in contrast to death or perishing in the Bible's theology. But Satan is like, no, you're going to burn forever. It's going to be this terrible, constant torture. Mm-hmm. This is Satan's mindset about who God is.
And the purpose from the beginning has always been to distort the character of God.
Yeah.
Because God is a God of love.
But I don't think it's just that their purpose is to distort. They like, I know it's true, but I'm going to lie about it. I think that they genuinely believe the lie.
Yeah.
This would suggest that they do anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So as we continue on, the next interesting thing that I see is the evil spirits begged him, "Send us into those pigs. Let us enter them." Those spirits can do nothing without Jesus' permission. And so Jesus says, run along. Now we could go into the fact that maybe Jesus let him go in there because eating pigs is not proper. I haven't explored that whole thing. But in this community, pigs were their economy.
Well, if you've got 2,000 of anything, any animal, that's a pretty significant farm. That is
pretty significant. And they are gone. So Jesus wipes out their economy. He does it in a land that these people don't like the Jews. And I seriously think that they don't like them any better now that 2,000 pigs are gone. And so we have the herdsmen going to the town, and the town people come in, and they see what God has done for this man, what Jesus has done for this man. He's sitting there. He's somebody has given him a clean set of clothes to wear. And they beg him, go away from here. You know, leave us alone. Mm-hmm. They're scared. There's a lot of fear in this story, in these two stories, actually. And then as Jesus is getting into the boat, the man who's been demon-possessed begged to go with him, and Jesus said no. Now, you might think that Jesus is rejecting this man, but he's really not. Jesus has a plan for this man. And he says, go to your family, tell them what the Lord has done for you. And this man started off to visit the 10 towns of Decapolis. And
you mentioned something that my brain is just kind of churning with, that there's a lot of fear in these two stories. The disciples were afraid of the storm. Then they were afraid of Jesus. Who mm-hmm. is this man? The demon is afraid of Jesus, and the people in the town are afraid. Who was not afraid in these two stories?
Jesus.
And?
The healed man?
The demon-possessed man. He came to Jesus. Okay. And then when Jesus heals him, and he's like, I want to go with you, Jesus. And then when Jesus said, no, go to your family, he's like, all right, I'm not just going to go to my family. I'm going to start a tour, and I'm going to start preaching about Jesus. This is not, that's just a fascinating thing. Like, he's not afraid.
I want to mention two things here. Do you realize that this is the very first commissioned missionary? This story takes place before Jesus sends out the disciples, the 70. He is the very first missionary, and we don't even know his name. We know J.N. Andrews, but you know J.N. Andrews? Good. Yes. You should.
Yeah.
Andrews University?
Yeah. But he is the very first missionary that God sends out. And the second thing...
Now, just to be fair, this is not the first missionary that God has ever sent out. We could go back to Enoch or, you know, others and find other missionaries. But this is the first Christian missionary. This is the first missionary talking about Jesus.
Yes, mm-hmm. This is the one that Jesus sent out and commissioned. The other thing that I find extremely interesting in these two stories is that Jesus crossed an angry sea to save one man. Hmm. I mean, think about that. He didn't have to do this, but there was one soul on the other side who needed saving, and Jesus reached out to save him.
The next verse, we're not going to go into this story, but the next verse says, Jesus got back into the boat and went back to the other side of the lake.
Yeah.
He came over
for one reason.
There was a large crowd on this side, and he goes to the other side to heal this man, and then he comes back to the large crowd.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He went, stopped in the airport, said hi to someone, then went right back. In modern terms,
wow.
So yeah, this is and the story gets better, and we'll probably continue that next week.
Do you think our friend who really wanted us to cover this is have we hit the thing that he's really interested in yet?
I'm thinking that the next section might be the
section. That's the next one. Okay.
That he's interested in. I'm sure he'll text me if I hit it or if we missed something. We'll
maybe we'll have to bring him on and he can give us some additional insight. Yeah, if
that would be great.
Yeah. You know. All right. Well, until then.